WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. Randy Schultz is considered the foremost journalist writing about AIDS. He's written about AIDS since the early days of the epidemic and was the first journalist to cover the AIDS beat full-time. That was at the San Francisco Chronicle. He's also the author of the groundbreaking 1987 book And the Band Played On, an investigation into politics and the AIDS epidemic. Schultz covered the 6th International Conference on AIDS last month in San Francisco and wrote several columns about it. In one of them, he described this as the new era of bad feelings.
I think what we've had in the last year is an increasing polarization between the activist and the scientist. I think that there's on one hand, I guess what we have to do is backtrack for what these conferences used to be like. I remember in the first International AIDS Conference in 1985 in Atlanta, it was a time when everybody got together and sort of patted each other on the back and people congratulated each other. And for the problems that existed, people would sit down and they commiserate with each other about all the problems. There is a sense that we were all in this together. I think what we've seen in the past couple of years is an increasing polarization between the researchers and the activist community. And part of it, I think the reason for this polarization is the good news that's happening, that people who are affected by HIV and this disease are being told increasingly by researchers that, you know, we're going to get medical solutions to AIDS, we're going to find treatments that work. But the trouble is year after year goes by and these treatments are very slow in arriving. And so that creates a lot of frustration.
What do you think are some of the most interesting health research developments that have happened recently?
Oh, it's very exciting, the stuff that came out of this conference. And it's a shame it was almost overshadowed by the protest because there's neat science going on. First of all, the area that was the most exciting this year at the AIDS conference was around vaccine research. Mm-hmm. I remember at the International AIDS Conference 2 years ago in Stockholm, there were eminent scientists predicting that we would never have an AIDS vaccine, that it was possible that we'd never get a vaccine. Now, just 2 years later, and at this conference, the opinion really gelled that most researchers, just about everybody working in vaccine research, believes that not only are we going to get an AIDS vaccine, but that we'll have an AIDS vaccine by the end of this decade. The second area of good news is on looking for AIDS treatments. Now, when we talk about treatments for AIDS, very few researchers ever use the word cure, which is something that sort of wipes out a disease. What they talk about are treatments, that is long-term treatments. And the trend really started last year, but it's more pronounced this year, where researchers are getting very optimistic that the day will come when AIDS is a chronic, manageable disease. That is, AIDS will be something like diabetes, where it's something that being infected with the AIDS virus, there's going to be something always wrong with you, but rather than have it be something that kills you, it's something that will be medically managed over a long period of time.
So there are new drugs in the wings that would
There's lots of antiviral drugs, and finally we're starting to see the designer drugs. You see, the drugs being used right now on AIDS, drugs such as AZT and the new drugs DDI and DDC, were drugs that were originally invented for cancer, and they sort of took them off the shelf. They found in the test tube that they worked against the AIDS virus, so now they're putting them in people. But what we're seeing now is the generation of designer drugs come up. These are drugs that have been designed in order to hamper and stop the various reproduction processes of the AIDS virus itself. Now, the more specific the drug is, the better designed it is, the more effective it will be, and hopefully the less toxic it will be to other cells in the body. So this generation of designer drugs is now coming to the point where they're going to be hopefully getting wide-scale testing, and then we'll be able to get some real serious life extension. So I know when I talk to people now who, you know, they say, well, I don't want to take the AIDS test because there's nothing I can do, or they test positive and they say, oh my God, I'm going to die. I just tell them that's no longer a scientifically reasonable assumption to have, because scientifically the advances are coming, and most researchers say that now we're not more than 4, 5, 6 years away of really finding that medical solution to HIV.
The only drug that's been approved by the FDA for treating the AIDS virus is AZT. Is there a feeling that the FDA should be moving quicker on certain drugs?
Well, a couple of years ago, much of the frustration was focused at the FDA. But I think what you've got to remember is the FDA is a very passive agency. What they do is sit in Bethesda and say, bring us evidence that your drug works, and we'll decide whether or not to approve it. They do not create drugs. They do not test drugs. They're strictly a regulatory agency. And actually, in the last couple of years, the FDA has significantly speeded up its a release and access to AIDS drugs. The real problem now, the bottleneck, is not in the FDA, but at the National Institutes of Health, which is supposed to be running the test that determine whether or not the drugs actually work or not. Because remember, it doesn't do any good to let everybody have a drug, to release a drug, unless we know whether it really does work, unless we have some sense of what the toxicities, the side effects are. And that's where the real problem is. I mean, at this conference that just came out of San Francisco, I mean, now they're researching like 100 drugs that either stop the AIDS virus or that stop stop the infections that are associated with AIDS. This gets to the area that's very problematical, is that here on the scientific front, we have a lot of excitement about the breakthroughs we're making in treatment research and vaccine research. The trouble is on the political front, the resources are not being allocated in order to take advantage of the headway we're making in science and get the and translate it into concrete help for people who are suffering from HIV infection. And this is the real problem.
I read that in San Francisco there's been protests against what's been called the San Francisco model of treating patients, which is largely relying on a lot of volunteers. And I read that the volunteer ranks are exhausted and people want more government money to replace the volunteers with paid workers. What can you tell us about that?
The San Francisco model of AIDS care is, as you said, it's a combination of using sort of a minimal amount of city employees and then working through community-based organizations who mobilize large numbers of volunteers. And I think what the experience of AIDS shows is that the San Francisco model of dealing with AIDS is extremely successful in almost any city except San Francisco and New York. The problem that you're seeing in both San Francisco and New York at the present time is that most of the volunteers, probably 80% of the volunteers, came from the gay community. So the people who were volunteering 4 and 5 years ago are either burned out themselves, either most commonly they've been diagnosed themselves with AIDS, or let's say their lover has got AIDS, and so instead of going out and taking care of a stranger, that person who once volunteered is now taking care of their lover or their best friend. And so the volunteer base has been profoundly depleted. In fact, I don't think any of these organizations would be able to run, certainly in major urban areas, if it weren't for large numbers of lesbians who've now started volunteering in AIDS groups. If it weren't for the lesbians, everything would fall apart in San Francisco. So what is the transition that needs to happen is either government agencies are going to have to start picking up the responsibilities that have thus far been handled by volunteers, or we're going to have to find a new base of volunteers. That means that heterosexuals are going to have to start working in this disease. And I think there certainly have been many examples of individual heroics among people outside of the gay community. But as of yet, we have not seen a significant infusion of volunteers from other segments of the population to really pick up the slack.
I'm wondering if you expect to see a lot of protests in the near future against the immigration policies that officially keep out homosexuals and people with AIDS. This was the big subject at the recent AIDS conference, and some groups boycotted the conference because of it.
Now, America is one of the only countries in the world that bars HIV-infected people from its shores. To give you an example of the other countries that do this, is the People's Republic of China, and this policy is most popular among Islamic republics such as Iran and Kuwait. And so we're sort of following rules that the Ayatollah would be very, very proud of. This has made us sort of an outcast among other nations in terms of how we deal with foreigners or people who are HIV infected. I think the 1992 AIDS conference was scheduled for Boston. It will be moved out of the United States shortly if the United States government doesn't change its policy. The International AIDS Society, which sponsors the conference, has decided that. Harvard University, a co-sponsor of the 1992 conference, has said, we won't sponsor this conference as long as it's going to take place in a country, in Boston, where this happens. And so I think, in terms of protest, I think the wave of militants that we've seen grow in the last couple of years around AIDS has only begun. And I don't think it's going to be around the immigration issue so much as around the issue of treatments. I think you've got to remember that in recent years, the trend has been certainly in the gay community, and that's really the organizing base for these protests, that within the gay community, the trend has been that people are taking the HIV antibody test. They're finding out they're infected with the AIDS virus. And so suddenly these issues of how we test our drugs and how AIDS drugs get approved, these issues which once seemed very abstruse and the province of obscure bureaucrats in Washington, all of these, of a sudden, these distant issues become very close at hand because they're going to be the issues that decide whether or not you live or die. People aren't in the mood for candlelight marches anymore, and I think we're just starting to see the beginning of the militants that will exist if we don't start to see a mobilization on the part of the government.
Right before we started our interview, you told me something that really surprised me, which is that you plan to stop covering AIDS.
Yeah. I've been writing about AIDS for 8 years now. When I first wrote my first AIDS story, it was in April of 82, there were 330 cases of AIDS. As I covered the conference last week, there's now 137,000 cases. Just as a journalist, I just can't keep on doing it. It sounds real corny, but when you start having nightmares where you wake up in the middle of the when you're in having nightmares and you're wandering around people's funerals and wandering around graveyards screaming, I can't take it anymore, I take that as a subconscious indication that maybe I shouldn't be covering this story. And so I felt a profound moral responsibility to cover the story at a time when nobody else was covering it and other people weren't willing to write about it and weren't willing also to rock the boat and be obnoxious and aggressive to government officials, which I think is an appropriate thing for a newspaper reporter to do. Personally, I'm just very burned out. You know, I am gay. I live in the gay community of San Francisco. You know, to spend all day writing about a disease and then get off work and then have to go home where half of my friends are dying of this disease, I've just found it a little bit much at this point. So I'm going to be pulling back from this. And I'm starting a new book in the fall. And that's what I'll be doing.
How has your job changed over the years in terms of covering AIDS? I mean, as you say, you started when so few people were writing about it.
Oh, no. And I remember when I wrote my first story about AIDS in 1982, we got the majority of surviving AIDS patients in San Francisco in one living room, and I interviewed them. If you could, now you'd need Candlestick Park to get your surviving AIDS patients from San Francisco. I mean, it's, you know, it's changed so much. The story is very different in how vast it is. You know, when I first covered it, it meant going down to Castro Street. But within a couple of years ago, I was going to Uganda and certainly spending a lot of time in Washington figuring out how the government was responding. So much has changed in terms of the scope of the problem and, you know, the thousands and tens of thousands of people who are now working on it. What's depressing about it, or I should say what's angering about it, is how, in a very profound way, the basic storyline has not changed at all. That the story of AIDS remains a story of a huge problem and a response to it, which is not even remotely commensurate to the scope of the problem. And that continues to be the story. So today, you know, when I was writing about AIDS at the beginning, there was hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on hundreds of cases. Today I write about AIDS and there's $1 billion or $2 billion being spent on hundreds of thousands of cases, and it's still not enough. And of course, the legacy of all the years of not dealing with it have taught us one thing, is that all of those unheeded warnings and all of those lost opportunities in the end add up to one thing, and that's dead bodies and, you know, suffering that didn't need to happen.
You were, to my knowledge, the first openly gay journalist who was writing about AIDS. And was affiliated full-time with a newspaper. And then you went on to become the most famous journalist who was writing full-time about AIDS. And you were openly gay. So I remember when your book and The Band Played On came out, your book about AIDS, you were on this really big media tour. And when I saw you, I think you were bracing yourself for, like, every radio and television interviewer to say, so tell me, do you test HIV positive? I'm sure you got asked that a lot, and I want to know how you dealt with it, if you thought, you know, assuming that you thought it was really, like, not relevant to the story.
Well, yeah, I mean,
what was the way of telling people no? I mean, telling people that you didn't want to answer that, yeah.
My basic way of is I feel that the only people who have a right to ask me that question are people going to bed with me. And so usually the people who asked me that question were guys. They were always, men would ask if I were, so I say, well, you know, you have a right to know if you're going to bed with me. So is that a question or a proposition? It's sort of like when somebody asked me if I'm a, this came up in some of the early interviews, they'd make a comment about, so you're practicing homosexual, and I always felt, well, after all these years, I really stopped practicing, and I'm just perfect at it now.
Oh, when learners can really come in handy.
Yeah. They always work.
So was there a kind of like last straw for you that made you say, okay, I'm going to do it, I'm going to stop writing about AIDS? I bet it's something you had really thought about for a while, but you finally reached the point where you said, okay, I'm going to do it.
It's funny because intellectually I never got burned out. It is an exciting story. I mean, it's very interesting. It's very sad, but it's very interesting as to watch, especially having covered it from the very beginning and watching it all unfold as an international historic event. But, I mean, it was really with me, it was never a conscious thought. It was just I started having horrible nightmares, and every night it'd be HIV nightmares and just horrible things. And then so when I went back, I took some time off, and I've been, both of my books are in development as movies, so I was in L.A. for a while, and I came back to San Francisco to cover the conference. The first night I was back at the Chronicle, I got a headache that lasted 18 days until I was done with the conference. And so sort of my body telling me things. It's just a level of intense burnout that I think a lot of people get with this and who have to deal with this disease all the time.
Can you give us your overall evaluation of mass media coverage of AIDS?
I think in terms of dealing with the scientific aspect, it's been very good. What people remember, don't I think appreciate enough, was that this was an area where there could have been incredible hysteria, incredible homophobia, a lot of anti-gay backlash. And on the whole, we had really relatively little of that when you consider the scope of the problem. And I think it's because the media was very responsible, not only about talking how AIDS could be spread, but how it could not be spread. And I think the media tended to take a very compassionate tone, usually in dealing with this disease. So I'd give it high marks on the science and medicine of AIDS, where I think there's always been a problem, and there continues to be a problem today, is dealing with the politics and the policy aspects of this. You know, when you look at I don't believe there is any major newspaper in the United States other than the Chronicle that went through and looked at the Bush budget and what it meant for AIDS, and also looked at the fact that the Bush budget cutters at the Office of Management and Budget cut by 50% the funds that the government's own experts, that the scientists at the National Institutes of Health, at the Centers for Disease Control, said they needed to fight this disease. And, I mean, it blows my mind that you've got a problem that's so vast, and the Washington Post doesn't bother to write about what's going on in Washington, D.C. regarding, you know, AIDS spending and AIDS policy decisions at the top of the government. You know, they'll cover the sexy things. You know, last week it was immigration, so they covered that. But they only are responsive. It's like the national editors of this country are brain dead when it comes to dealing with, you know, doing enterprise investigative reporting of the federal government's response to AIDS. And it's just as bad now as it was in 1983. And I don't know what's going to take to change it, you know, because they're just not doing it yet.
So when do you officially stop writing about AIDS? And are you going to be doing anything to mark that change in your life?
Yeah, well, pretty much I'm done now. The conference was my last bit at doing it, and so I'm hoping that I can stop now. And I'm going to be starting a new book shortly, and I've already started my preliminary interviews on it. So that's going to be it.
Okay, well, I wish you the best, and thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Journalist Randy Schiltz.